As I was considering today's gospel, in my study during the week, I came across this quote. And as I reflected on it, I realized that really encapsulates today's gospel theme. So here's the quote that I would like to share with you this morning. Not everything that can be counted counts. And not everything that counts can be counted. Now you might say, what? Let me say that again. Not everything that can be counted, that is, not everything that can be counted counts, and not everything that counts can be counted. Now just let that play around in your mind for a little bit. And I want to share with you something that the United Nations releases every year. It's called the World Happiness Report. And every year, the United Nations measures those countries that it determines to be the happiest. And it's always dominated by Scandinavian countries. Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Iceland, and Finland. They are always in the top 10. But what is striking about these, quote, happiest countries, they also rank as some of the least religious countries in the world. So what do we make of this? May I suggest to you this morning that the measurement that the United Nations is using is the one that looks at things like GDP, universal health care, education, unemployment rates, and the like. Now, don't get me wrong, these are very, very important measurements. And indeed, in today's epistle, St. Paul says that the state has a responsibility to ensure that the social fabric of the nation is intact, so that, he says, we can lead quiet and peaceable lives in devotion to God. But the problem with the United Nations measurement is that the only kind of happiness that they have a ruler to measure is economic happiness. And think about this. In those countries in the West where economies are strong, these are the nations, the wealthiest nations, where agnosticism and atheism, that is, we don't need to trust in God, are also very high. But it's not only this association that we need to consider. There's something that psychologists call the pursuit of economic happiness, and they refer to it as the upward social comparison. The upward social comparison. What's the principle of this? That people are always wanting to compare themselves to others with more money, more popularity, more fame, more power. And if I can be above that other person, I'm going to be happier. Robin Williams, who you know tragically committed suicide, said, yeah, in winning the Academy Award, it made me happy for about a week. The most popular album of all time was Michael Jackson's album Thriller. And he said, my next album needs to exceed the sales of Thriller. It sold at 70% less, but it still sold 30 million copies. But as one commentator said, for Jackson, the contrast with his earlier success was stinging. So we either try to compare ourselves to others or we try to compare ourselves to ourselves. And if we are looking just for these external forms of measurement, the ruler is going to snap because we're not to live that way. Oh, here's another part of this idea, this psychological sort of framework. It's called the arrival fallacy. This is the phenomenon where people think that once I have attained my goals, that happiness that has been so elusive, I will finally find it. And I will be happy. But it is surprisingly fleeting. Like the horizon, it always eludes our arrival. Because you see, this achievement for superiority and social comparison does not bring us lasting satisfaction. Now, here's the interesting thing. This is not a modern phenomenon. It wasn't the United Nations Happiness Report that kind of first brought this kind of measurement forward. Indeed, it's so interesting that of the four Gospels, a quarter of Luke's parables and stories deal with a right relation to economics. And of the four Gospel writers, St. Luke is the one for whom this theme, not everything that can be counted counts, and not everything that counts can be counted, plays out. And it's particularly so in today's Gospel. Two people, an incredibly wealthy man. He's got such wealth that he's hired someone to look after his money. But this guy is a twisted manager. He hasn't been doing a good job with his boss's property. And it's interesting that the word for manager could also be the word steward. But the word in Greek that you'll find in this passage in the New Testament is this word, oikonomos. Oikonomos. Oiko is the Greek word oikos for house. Nomos is the Greek word for law. And so an oikonomos is someone who's responsible for the law of the household. Oikonomos, we get the English word economics from these Greek words. And so this guy, who was responsible for the money with measuring everything that could be counted, realizes I'm in trouble. So he cooks the books and tries to ensure that when the boss fires him, at least he's going to have some place to go, some place where he can lay his head. And as is true with the parables of Jesus, there's a point where you say, this is a dumb story. Because we're told that the guy who's being having his property mismanaged commends the steward for his shrewdness. But here's the point that Jesus is wanting to make. He's saying, listen, there are people who all they have to measure the meaning of their life is an economic scale. And what the big guy is impressed by, that this guy is showing at least some sort of economic prudence. He's making sure that he can secure his economic future. But here's the point of the whole story. The problem is that those of us who are children of light, that is, we're baptized, we've been confirmed, we're part of the Roman Catholic Church. The problem is that the people who are, in a sense, just concerned about the economy of scale in this world live with a greater sense of purpose and perspective than those of us who understand what it is to invest in that has eternal dividends. Listen to how Jesus puts it. For the children of this age are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than the children of light. And then we have that reading from Amos, where people are at worship, but they think, like, will Mass be over soon? I want to go home and watch football. Or, even worse, will Mass be over soon, or these spiritual things, so I can get back to what really matters, and that's measuring my life according to money, according to material things. And the point that Amos and Jesus are making is this. We are to be shrewder than Donald Trump. We are to be shrewder than the vast majority of people that are put forward in our society as representing happiness, and almost all of them, it's only happiness according to an economic scale. We are to live differently. Well, Jesus, how are we to do that? He tells us the answer. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of dishonest wealth, so that when it is gone, they may welcome you into the eternal homes. I think, in other words, Jesus is making the point that money in this world, there's so many ways in which it can be twisted and corrupted that Jesus calls it dishonest wealth. But use money so that you are investing eternally. And I don't have time to go to this in great detail, but that there is a subtle play at work here where what Jesus is talking about is giving alms to the poor. And the point is this, remember the manager? He wanted to cook the books so that then the people that he'd given a discount to, they would welcome him to their homes. So what does Jesus mean when he says they will welcome you into eternal homes? It's this, that if we are people of generosity, if we are people who show a particular concern for the poor, if we give alms, when we then die and go to heaven, the poor will be there to welcome us and say, thank you for caring for me when I was in this world. That's the point of the parable. And so I think it's appropriate that today, as happens every Sunday, but today, St. Peter's is doing Feeding the Hungry at the cathedral, where we have a team of about 40 or 50 parishioners who are down there now and will be down there this afternoon, and will help to provide a meal for 500 people. Now, that's not everything, but it's something. And the point that Jesus is saying here, we're not to solve the problem of world poverty per se, because we'll always have the poor with us, but we are to live in such a way that we understand that part of what we are called to is to use what he calls dishonest wealth in the service of those who need that support. Jose Maria Escriva, the founder of Opus Dei, wrote the following. What zeal people put into their earthly affairs, dreaming of honors, striving for riches, bent on sensuality. Men and women, rich and poor, old and middle-aged and young and even children, all of them alike, just wanting to find their name somewhere in the world, the report of the United Nations. But listen to what St. Jose Maria goes on to say. When you put that same zeal into the affairs of our souls, we will have a living and working faith. That is the point of the parable. That is the point of today's gospel articulated by St. Luke. Oh, and by the way, although he didn't write the quote, Albert Einstein, who knew more about numbers and being able to count what can be counted, in his Princeton University study, had these words framed on his wall. Not everything that can be counted counts, and not everything that counts can be counted.